Live from WJFF Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatville. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday, and Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government with the latest from Monticello. Mom on a mission. Stacy Millman is founder of Evergreen Meadow Academy, an agency assisting young girls experiencing trauma in Sullivan County and across New York State. We speak to her about Evergreen's mission and how they're helping young girls overcome trauma. Roscoe Public Theater, a new startup theater company, announces the presentation of their first production at Roscoe Fireman's Field. I'll have a preview. And the Ruffed Grouse Gallery in Narrowsburg presenting Luke Hannum, Hits and Deliberate Misses, the British artist's debut exhibition in the U.S. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi has a preview of the opening. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Biden is ramping up his reelection campaign as he continues to fend off calls to drop out of the race. Biden is scheduled to travel to the Democratic stronghold of Madison in Wisconsin today. Chuck Quernbach of member station WUWM reports during his visit, Biden will pre-tape an interview with ABC News, which will air later tonight.
Biden rolled up a huge margin over former President Donald Trump in Madison in the 2020 presidential election. But the Democrat is returning to the city after probably doing a debate against Trump last week and with some members of Biden's party asking him to quit the presidential race. Biden has rejected those calls. But University of Wisconsin-Madison political scientist Barry Burden says many eyes will be on the president.
I don't think perfection is the standard, but he needs to have energy and to show that he's paying attention, that he's clear in his thinking. Those were all the concerns that were expressed after the debate.
Wisconsin Republicans say the status of the Biden campaign is tenuous. For NPR News, I'm Chuck Quernbach in Milwaukee.
There's been a major power shift in the United Kingdom after Britain's Labour Party delivered a crushing defeat to the country's Conservatives in yesterday's parliamentary election. Speaking to his supporters, newly elected Prime Minister Keir Starmer outlined his vision for the nation.
We will rebuild Britain with wealth created in every community, our NHS back on its feet facing the future, secure borders, safer streets, everyone treated with dignity and respect at work.
Former British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak offered his resignation to King Charles today. He also apologized to his supporters, saying that he gave the job his all. Stocks on Wall Street opened mixed this morning as the Labor Department reported a modest slowdown in job growth last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost about 56 points in early trading.
U.S. employers added 206,000 jobs in June, while job gains for April and May were revised lower. The unemployment rate inched up to 4.1% as 277,000 new people joined the workforce. Government, healthcare, and construction all added jobs last month, while factories and retail stores cut back slightly. Temporary help services, which are often seen as a bellwether for future moves in the labor market, cut 49,000 jobs. Average wages were up 3.9% from a year ago, which is likely more than enough to outpace inflation and boost workers' buying power. That's the smallest annual wage gain in 3 years, though, which is another sign the job market is gradually cooling. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News in Washington. Hurricane Beryl has made landfall on Mexico's coast near the resort town of Tulum. The Category 2 storm is bringing torrential rainfall and damaging winds to the area. Forecasters at the National Hurricane Center says Beryl is expected to rapidly weaken to a tropical storm as it passes over the Yucatan Peninsula, but could regain hurricane strength as it reemerges into the Gulf of Mexico. A second round of voting is underway in Iran to elect a new president. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports people are choosing between a hardline conservative and a reformist candidate.
A snap election was held on June 28th, following the death of President Ebrahim Raisi in a helicopter crash. The two top vote-getters are now in a runoff. There's a sharp contrast between the two remaining candidates. Former nuclear negotiator Saeed Jalili is a hardline conservative known for his anti-Western political views. Reformist candidate Masoud Pezeshkian is a doctor and former member of parliament.
That's NPR's Peter Kenyon reporting. There's a new approach to talk therapy in the African country of Zimbabwe. It involves park benches and a network of grandmothers. With a severe lack of mental health resources in the country, the Friendship Bench was started by a local psychiatrist. The idea was to train grandmothers from across the country in basic problem-solving therapy, and as a result, they've become trusted sources for people seeking help. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include TimberTech, transforming landfill-bound waste into sustainable PVC and composite outdoor decking products designed to look like real wood. More at TimberTech.com. Everything wood should be. And from the Doris Duke Foundation.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Friday, and even though it's July 5th, day after a holiday, Dan Hoost, the Sullivan County Government Communications Director, still hard at work. Hello.
We never rest, so I may not work quite as hard as the 911 dispatchers do, but they're my inspiration.
You're here to update us on what's going on in Monticello. Of course, there was no legislature meeting yesterday because of the July 4th holiday, but still some news to share. Something that popped up, we saw earlier in the week, there was a fire at the former Monticello Hospital, known as Monticello Manor. What happened there?
It's what we call an attractive nuisance. it has a lot of trash and papers and people who are up there. Who knows? I mean, I'll wait for our fire investigators to tell me whether there was any arson involved or anything, but it has been empty for decades. It was one of two hospitals in Monticello until Garnet Catskills opened. But Garnet Catskills opened almost 50 years ago. So
it's been abandoned for a while.
There hasn't been a lot going on there. So I have been back up in there. The county owned it. Now the Sullivan County Land Bank owns it. But the plan is with them that we have a developer in the wings. We don't have an agreement worked out yet, so don't have the exact details about this. But the overall plan is for this developer to take title to the property and to build two four-story affordable housing apartment complexes, which will be basically, it's right in the heart of Monticello. If you don't know where it is, everyone seems to know where the beer store is in Monticello. In fact, I ran into people up in Saratoga Springs one time and I said, well, I'm from the Monticello area. Oh, that's where the beer store is. I make sure I stop there all the time. So anyway, up behind there, on the hill there, one of the highest points in the village of Monticello, might even be the highest point, is where this was built. It actually, if you look at old postcards, had a beautiful set of stairs leading from Route 42 up to the original hospital building, which still stands. The stairs are still in there. You can't really see them unless you know where to look, and I wouldn't recommend you do it while you're driving because it's a very busy part of 42. But this affordable housing is what we're really looking forward to. So those buildings are coming down anyway. It didn't really destroy it. It had a little part of the wing, I think, that it destroyed, but the rest of the buildings are still there. They had water towers up there at one point that I remember would leak during the winter, and you would have these huge ice formations. Like I said, an attractive nuisance. Mm. So we're eager to get rid of it. That's why the land bank took ownership of it, to redevelop the property and to create something we sorely need, which is the affordable housing.
So the fire's still under investigation. Is there a timeline yet on the affordable housing project?
Hopefully later this year that the title changes, and then maybe next year demolition. Or maybe they could even get to demolition this year, but at least next year get going with this project.
Some stats for Sullivan County statewide in job growth and unemployment. Things look pretty good.
Yeah. We continue to be among the top five counties in New York State for job growth. That has stayed steady for every month since the pandemic. I keep watching this, waiting for it to fall out of there because, you know, what goes up has to come down at some point, right? But so far, we continue to be a magnet for job opportunities, and not just in the hospitality, leisure, tourism industries, as you would expect, but also in healthcare, even in manufacturing. I think I said last week or the week before, we lead in sales tax revenue in the last quarter in all of the state. We had double-digit increases in sales tax revenue compared to other people who mostly had decreases because a lot of people are building and moving to the area, buying cars that are registered here. Our unemployment rate actually is not too bad either. We are pretty much in line with the rest of the state. We have, let me just see here, Sullivan is at 3.4% unemployment as of May. That's the latest. June numbers will be coming out hopefully in another few weeks, and I'll talk about them there. But we are right where we would expect to be. Obviously, we'd love to have it a little lower. But as our Community Resources Commissioner Laura Quigley has reminded me often, you will never have a 0% unemployment rate. There are people who are employable, but for whatever reason are not in the market for a job or are unable to maintain a job. So as long as we are under 5%, we're usually pretty happy about that. Like I said, we're at 3.4% compared to the worst performer, poor Bronx. They're always worse than us in the health rankings, too. Bronx has 6.3% unemployment, although honestly, probably even for them, that's not as bad as it has been in years past. I think nationally, they talked about how the economy added over 200,000 jobs nationally just recently. So we continue to be in a strong, and what I would say in Sullivan County, sort of a boom period.
Yeah, just announced this morning, the U.S. adds 206,000 jobs in June, which is considered a solid month of gains. And the unemployment rate, though, ticked up a little bit nationally to 4.1%. We had yesterday on Chatskill had a close to home Leif Johansson's podcast that's here on WJFF. Mm-hmm, and he spoke to his county historian, John Conway, and they talked about the Sullivan County Airport and aviation history, which was a great historical lesson. But he mentioned the airport, and you're mentioning the airport today because some of those jobs are at the new airport construction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And what's the latest with the terminal there?
Yeah, well, we just posted, I love these time-lapse videos. I always was like, how do you make one of these? It's actually the software does it for you. But I have access to a camera that the construction contractor mounted several months ago. High up above the terminal, you can actually see not only that, but part of the runway and the taxiway. And it's, of course, focused squarely on this terminal that we're building. It's a $20 million new terminal, paid for almost entirely by the state through a grant. We are on track to have it open in May of 2025, which means that we are in the throes of construction right now. And the most interesting thing I got to see in the last 30 days, because that's what I had the software run it through, was a time-lapse video of the last month, was that the foundation finished and the glue-laminated timber went up, which glue-laminated, I think of, and it comes from Unilam, I think, up in Sydney. I think of those big wooden arches that hold up like gym roofs things like that. This is more, they're just straight up and down, and they look, at least in the camera, like they're steel. But they aren't. It's actually wood timbers. This is a an energy efficient, renewable friendly building project, and they put these timbers up, and they are immensely strong. But they're wood when they look like steel. So take a look at that. It'll show it going up, and of course, in another month, I'll have another time lapse video to show. This is fascinating to watch this building get built.
Yep. We're talking to Dan Hoost. He's the Sullivan County Communications Director, and he joins us every Friday. It's going to be hot and humid. It's summer. It's going to be in the 80s from now through next week. There aren't official cooling centers in the county, but there are places where folks can go to cool off.
Yes, I've been showing this to a number of different people. I'm going to put it up again today since we're in the midst of summer. We have this cool interactive map that our GIS, Geographic Information Systems people put together over a year ago. It's actually a map that shows both cooling and warming centers, so depending on the time of year, because we do have official warming centers that we have. But for cooling centers, what we have are a list of things like libraries, Walmart, the government center, our parks where you can cool off in the water. And you can put in your zip code and say, I want something within a mile of where I live or with 20 miles of where I live, depending on how mobile you are. And we can show that to you as to what cooling centers are available. That said, if you are in deep distress where you're having issues with staying cool, don't hesitate to call 911. We're here to help on that. We do not want anyone having a serious health crisis just because they couldn't get to a cooler place. We'll find a way to get you to a cooler place. And one other thing I want to mention, I didn't think about this until just now. Our home energy assistance program, HEAP, which is known mostly for paying for fuel oil and propane and stuff to heat your home. Also, if you're eligible, and most people are actually, can get a free air conditioner installed in your home. I have a relative who took advantage of this not too long ago. She suffers from dangerous heat conditions because of a neurological condition she has. And they came, they installed it. They also actually did some energy efficiency upgrades in her home. This single air conditioner heats her entire home, and this is a ranch size home, ranch style home. So it's a home of a good size, and it heats all the way through the house to her bedroom, which is on the other side of the house from the air conditioner. So we can really help with that.
Heat stroke, heat illness is serious. I mean, heat related deaths and are you know, affecting people in the U.S. About 1,200 people a year die of them, according to the CDC. So it's preventable. Take the steps to keep yourself cool this summer.
You come our direction, we'll meet you halfway or even better than that and get you into a cool spot.
You've got farmers market coupons available for folks 60 plus starting Wednesday.
Yeah, this
what are those coupons?
This is cool. This is what our Office for the Aging does this in association with the farmers markets every year. And they have these $5 coupons. They come in little packs that are available to anyone who is a Sullivan County resident and at least 60 years old or older. And can be used at farmers markets across the county. You just need to either come to the Office for the Aging to find them or give us a call. Or we also have a list that we have put up on our website, on our social media. It's been sent out to the papers, so they should have them too. I'm sure JFF will be airing something about that. I won't go through the whole list, but where these coupons can be found at various farmers markets, senior nutrition sites, senior housing. We want to get them out. We don't want to hold on to any. We want these coupons to be basically sold out, but they're free. So they're not really sold out, but they will, each coupon will get you $5 worth of whatever is being sold at our farmers market. So it's a great deal for anyone who's 60 years of age or older.
That's great. And Independence Day, of course, yesterday, but the events continue throughout the weekend, including Fort Delaware tomorrow.
Yeah, it's interesting how John Conway, actually speaking of him and his wife, Debbie, who run the Delaware Company, they're the ones that operate Fort Delaware for the county. We still own it, but they have really taken it in new directions. They oversee the events, the employees. We just sort of take care of the maintenance, make sure that the fort, even though it looks old, it's not that old, but is still in good shape to welcome people. I went as a child, and it's a fascinating place to go. The only thing they're missing is the cannon now, but that's because it developed a crack, and probably the neighbors don't mind that the cannon isn't there anymore. It used to fire on the hour. But we're going to have Oliver King there on Saturday talking about Independence Day from more the slave and African-American perspective. He is incredible to watch. He is a dramatic actor, a performance artist extraordinaire. You will be riveted by the presentation that he gives at Fort Delaware. And then a week from there, on the following Saturday, we're going to have Patriots and Loyalist Day at the fort. I've been to this before. This is where John Conway and his fellow Delaware Company board member, Bill Chellis, get to have a lot of fun. They get to, John, I think, reads the Declaration of Independence, and then Bill Chellis, who's also the mayor of Jeffersonville, dresses up in colonial garb and plays the role of a Tory who is like, no, we want the British king to remain our monarch, not have independence. And it gives you a real interesting look at what was a very divisive topic 225 years ago.
Some of it seems relevant today.
Doesn't it? It's just fun, too, to watch these two guys who are dramatic in their own way go at it to one another. You actually sort of expect fisticuffs to break out or something like that. It doesn't happen that way. But, hey, if you want to see probably what was the version of WWE wrestling back in colonial days, you know, come come see it at Fort Delaware. That'll be on the 13th.
That's a tease. That's a good promo. Mm-hmm. Dan, who's Sullivan County Government, joins us every Friday. I'll let you get out of here and enjoy your weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, a mom on a mission helping young girls with mental health. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hey there, Jason Dole here. Radio Catskill's Summer Fun Drive starts Monday, and we're already on our way. Go to WJFFradio.org. You can see the progress we've already made towards our $55,000 goal. It's because your fellow listeners have already done their part. And if everyone listening gives something this holiday weekend, if you give something, we can end this fun drive before it even starts. Do your part. Help us make our goal in record time. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
You're with Radio Chatskill. Evergreen Meadow Academy is a new agency that offers mental health services, including individual and group therapy and trauma-informed interventions, specifically for young girls. According to the CDC, teen girls are experiencing record high levels of violence, sadness, and suicide risk. Evergreen Meadow Academy provides an educational environment that fosters healing and personal growth and is currently collaborating with the Liberty Central School District to support middle school girls. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio recently spoke to Stacey Millman, founder and president of Evergreen Meadow Academy, about their inception and their mission to assist young girls.
I'm a mom on a mission, and we are providing mental health services and programs to young girls who are at risk of self-harm or suicide because of trauma. And we're building a New York State-approved residential middle school for girls who need a higher level support right here in beautiful Sullivan County.
So what was the inspiration to start Evergreen Meadow Academy?
Actually, my daughter is the inspiration for building the school and for providing services. She's now 20. But when she was in middle school, we really struggled to find services for her here in Sullivan County because she had severe childhood trauma and love is not enough. And going to therapy once a week was not enough. And we needed a higher level of support for her. And we really struggled. One day when she was in middle school, we got a call from the teachers saying that Evelyn was really struggling that day and she had a plan for suicide. And we freaked out. And so we asked the teachers to keep her safe. I work in the healthcare industry, nervous. I was shaking. I was trembling. I didn't know what to do. And I'm a pretty resourceful person. And I called my friends and my colleagues, and we had to get her to a hospital, and we needed an adolescent psychiatric hospital to take her to. We don't have that in Sullivan County. And so we ended up taking her to Westchester County. We couldn't find a bed anywhere. We had somebody here helping us. I had people in the city helping us. We found a bed for her in Westchester. They kept her for 2 weeks. They stabilized her. But then what do you do? What do families do after? And hospitals are so important for stabilizing the kids, but then you really need to find, like, what's your ongoing support? And we ended up taking her to Four Winds partial hospitalization for 4 to 5 weeks. Most families can't do that. That's a 2.5-hour commute from here. And we were fortunate that we were able to figure out how to do that. But even after that, even after hospitalization and partial hospitalization, our daughter needed a higher level intensity of support. And there's nothing here. There's nothing in New York State for girls who are really struggling with suicide ideation. And so we ended up sending her out of state. We're lucky. We had the support and the resources, and we were able to cobble it together to do that. Most families don't. And when my daughter got a little bit older, I decided that we were going to do something here in New York State for New York State families. And so we're going to build here in Sullivan County, but it will be open to families all across New York State for girls who really need that level of support.
And absolutely. I mean, how is your daughter doing now, first of all?
Thank you for asking that. My daughter has good days and bad days, and she's still struggling, but she's alive. And I have no doubt in my mind that she wouldn't be had we not found a way to treatment and higher levels of support, and not just us. I mean, it really does take a community to support families, parents too, who are going through this.
You mentioned the not finding services here in Sullivan County, not disparage Sullivan County in any way, but it is a struggle to find quality services here in Sullivan County. And as the population grows, I think it's going to be more and more important that services are right here in our backyard instead of going to Westchester. Because you have the means to go to Westchester. Not everyone does that.
That's right.
That's really an important thing to think about.
I agree. And I think that one thing that we're learning about here in Sullivan County is that everybody has the desire. Garnet Health has the desire to have appropriate adolescent psychiatric services for the kids. The school districts have a desire to support the children, and how lucky are we that Governor Hochul now is doing school-based mental health services for kids. So I think that there's a will and there's a desire, and that we're all going to find our way there with all of us. Services like Evergreen Meadow, we have Aster Services now that have come to Sullivan County. They're wonderful. We're so excited for that. Garnet Health is doing the work that they need to do to get up to capacity. So I think we'll get there.
Yeah, I recently spoke to their CEO, Johnson Schiller, and he mentioned one of the things is they are looking to increase more is psychiatric, I don't know if that's the right word, but mental health services.
Absolutely.
And really, does the pandemic sort of really make them realize that was
100%
sort of happening? One of the good thing I saw someone else recently about, if there could be a silver lining, some silver linings for the pandemic, is that mental health has been brought to the forefront. And it's been sort of been easier to talk about in some aspects. I hear commercials for BetterHelp and other online therapy sessions, which I didn't really hear before the pandemic.
Absolutely.
And now it's every other commercial seems like it's that. That's more, I guess, breaking down the stigma of mental health.
100%. Yeah. 100%. And I think that, I think that families are more willing to talk about issues that are going on and the family and get support. And there are, a lot more services.
So can you describe some of the types of interventions and mental health services provided by Evergreen Meadow Academy?
While we are building our school, we are providing mental health services and programs that are culturally responsive to girls here in Sullivan County, particularly at Liberty Middle School. We run an amazing program. We've got a great partnership with them. Adrienne Jensen, who you may remember, was the former human rights director here in Sullivan County, is our executive director. At Liberty Middle School, we run empowerment groups for girls in fifth and sixth grade and in seventh and eighth grade that the school has identified that needs additional support. They have chats, they do yoga, they do breathing, they learn skills for making their way through the world. They come into these programs feeling withdrawn, defensive, not sure what to expect. At the end, when they do a celebration, these are strong, young, powerful women who have had a great experience. They have each other for support. They know that there are safe adults that they can go to if they need to. They have parents now who feel supported as well and engaged in the program. And these girls at Liberty Middle School, they're just coming to hang out with us. Don't realize or recognize that they are actually transitioning and how they cope and find their way through the world. Yeah. And so that's our goal. If you need some, every child needs support in this crazy, messed up world that we're living in. And we all want to create that culture of kindness and empowerment and confidence for our kids to make their way through the world. Obviously, based upon my experience, I have a particular desire to support young girls because that's what my daughter experienced. And I will say that the one thing that we've known about girls in this period of their lives in middle school is that they really, more and more girls, a growing number of girls are getting sadder, are experiencing more anxiety and depression. And those are the girls that we're trying to support and focus on.
Yeah, I think it's really important that it is being brought to the schools. I just remember growing up, services like that weren't available and how important it is to, especially during those years, middle school, high school, are just such changing in so many different ways.
They're changing.
School is different now. Social media.
Yes.
Their bodies for boys and girls are changing. Our hormones are changing, and just how life changes everyone.
The reason why it's so great to focus on middle school girls is because that really is a sweet spot when you can impact their lives. They're still trusting of adults, right? Their brains are still developing at a different level than once you're in high school. And they're the most impressionable then. And as you say, that's really on the threshold of when their bodies are changing and they're going from pre-adolescence into adolescence. And we find that is where that's really the sweet spot where you can have the most impact on how they go through life.
Right. Yeah. So there's no right now, as of now, there's no physical location for Evergreen Academy, right?
There is a physical site, though. We are actually building on 34 beautiful acres committed to us by the Center for Discovery, a great community partner in Rock Hill, New York. And that's where we'll be building. It's going to be the first, that is the first site where they had their initial residential program for their population.
Okay. Yeah. It's awesome that the Center for Discovery is helping that way, because that sort of leads to my next question is how does Evergreen engage with the local community and foster some supportive environment for the students?
You know, we have a lot of great community support from local schools like the Liberty Middle School to the county to our elected officials at all levels of government. But we're really grateful to our initial partners, community partners who stood with us from the very beginning when we said that we wanted to provide services to girls in Sullivan County and New York State. And they all came forward and said, how can they help? And those community partners were and are the Center for Discovery, the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, and Assemblywoman Aileen Guthrie and her office. They've all been incredible. And that's why, by the way, we are going to be honoring all of them at our inaugural events on September 23rd, the Arnold House. And I can't wait to talk to you more about that in the future. The mental health services that we're providing now are in-person programming and also individual therapeutic support. And so, yes, Sullivan County is our home and our base, and we're here to fill a gap in Sullivan County. So we're starting in Liberty. As our funding and our support increases, we know that there are other schools that want to work with us, and we will, for your listeners and for others to learn about us. For families who are out there struggling, for parents who want to talk to us, they should go to our website. You can call us and get individual support as well. We'll run support groups for parents. I remember reading in the Sullivan Democrat a few months ago about a mom who was really struggling about her daughter going to Garnet Health and not being able to find services. And I was like, I wish she knew about us. I don't know how to find this mom, but I wish she knew about this. So this opportunity to talk to your listeners and to introduce ourselves to our neighbors is a really great opportunity. And I thank you for that.
So you mentioned the parents and support that the parents get. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What sort of opportunities is this for parents to get involved in their child's well-being?
Yeah. Parents can call us and they can either participate in parent groups so that they get the support not only from our social workers, but from each other. They can share experiences and best practices and what's going on and what's not, because we really do learn a lot from each other. Or they can talk to us individually. And the one thing that we're really committed to is meeting the families where they're at. So if a girl is not ready to be in therapy or be in any support groups, that's okay. The parents can call us and talk to us, and we can provide you with support and parenting skill.
Yeah.
And so sometimes just having somebody to talk to and listen to and provide you with access to other resources or share information about different things to try can make all the difference. And we hear that all the time.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I was talking about hearing from Adrienne. She's, wow, this mom or this grandma, they were so thankful for the support that we gave them while they were in crisis. When you're in crisis is really, really when you need the help. Like what I shared with you about my daughter. I'm in this healthcare industry and I couldn't function when the school called me and I was shaking and I had to turn to people to provide support. And that makes a difference. It takes a community. It takes a village.
So if someone's hearing this and feels that their level may need support or they need support of themselves, where can they go now?
They should go to evergreenmeadowacademy.org to learn about who we are and what we provide in more detail than what I was able to give you today. Our phone number is there. Our email address is there. They can interact with us in any way they want. They can email us or call us, and clinical social worker will get back to them, or our executive director. So reach out to us. And I hope that the mom who wrote that letter to the Sullivan Democrat a couple of months ago is listening to the show, and she reaches out to us, because we are here for you and your daughter.
I was talking to Stacey Millman, president and founder of Evergreen Metal Academy, who's based out of Sullivan County.
That's right. And I live here, my family and I live here in Sullivan County. Oh, there's so much that I just want to say. A couple things that we didn't talk about. One, no child or family will have to pay for our school once it's built. It's going to be a New York State approved school. So there are no financial barriers. The tuition and the residential portion are covered by New York State. So it's open to all New York State middle schools who are eligible for our program. We want families to be engaged and involved, because we will not just treat the child. We will treat the whole family. And so there's got to be a caring, committed parent involved, right? And also my daughter's experience, while we cobbled together the means, but we had the resources and the privilege to do that, cobbled together the means to send my daughter out of state to get treatment. When she came back in state, our local school district, Sullivan West, was wonderful. And they really supported us in making sure that our daughter was able to continue her schooling in an environment that she needed. She still needed to have therapeutic treatment. Thank you to Sullivan West. And I will say that we've talked to all the school districts here in Sullivan County, and they're familiar with us, and they are everybody. Yeah, I think that everybody recognizes that we're in the middle of a mental health crisis for our youth and young girls in particular, and stigma is down. People want to get the support that they need for the girls, and we're going to help be part of the problem. Part of the solution. We're going to help be part of the solution.
One thing you just mentioned there that maybe I forgot to ask, the academy, you said it'd be free to those who attend. Yeah. So what exactly is the academy? You mentioned, is it Ashland State School? So are we, let's say if someone is in Sullivan West and they're not part of the program, are they transferring from Sullivan West to the Evergreen Academy and finishing their studies there? Or
Thank you. That's a great question. So it will be a middle school for girls in grades 6 through 8. Mm. They will probably spend, on average, they can spend up to a year with us. Really, it could be 6 months. It could be longer. It will be open to girls across New York State who are at risk for self-harm. Remember, we're talking or suicide. And the school district and the state, the tuition, instead of going to the local school district, the tuition would come to us. Just like New York State pays for tuition right now for your child to attend a public school, the tuition would come to our program. They would have to be referred to us from a local school. It could be any of in Sullivan County, or it could be a school from the Bronx, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Albany. Anywhere across New York State, if your daughter meets the criteria for needing that additional support.
So it's good to know. Again, thank you, Stacey, for telling about this great program. I've been hearing about it for over a year when I first spoke to Adrian Jensen about it when this was germinating. And it's great that it's actually up and running.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hope that you'll have us back. I hope you'll have Adrian in, because she's going to be able to tell you all of those heartwarming, inspirational stories about girls right now whose lives are being changed.
Yeah. Again, Stacey, thank you so much.
And thank you to Patricia Rubio for that. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, Catskill Public Theater announcing their first production at Roscoe Fireman's Field. This is Radio Chatskill.
On a morning from a Bogart movie, in a country where they turn back time. Just strolling through the crowd like Pete DeLorean contemplating a crime.
Back in the 1960s, the Scottish singer Al Stewart shared a London flat with the young Paul Simon. Next time on the Wackaloda Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we hear the songs and the singing of Al Stewart. Join me, please, for the music of Al Stewart on Sunday afternoon at 3.
And welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The mission of the Catskill Public Theater is to present free admission live theater to audiences in and around Sullivan County, New York. They've announced the presentation of their first production called Terror at Roscoe Fireman's Field. Here to tell us more about the original adaptation of the play for the Catskill Public Theater are the director of the play, Lee Van Dyke, and Marshall Schneider, founding director of Catskill Public Theater. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Thanks for coming in. And Marshall, we've had you on before when you first announced the Catskill Public Theater. This is the first production. But I've seen you around in the community with your mobile stage, your portable stage. How are things going so far with the startup theater?
Well, you know, a startup's a startup, but we're having some great success renting the mobile stage, which is going to help us subsidize the free admission theater. And we've been doing everything we can to promote this first production so we can get aggregate an audience.
Yeah. So, again, you want to bring this to folks for free. And part of the way you do that is with the rental of that mobile stage we've been seeing. But tell us about Terror. I mentioned it's an original adaption just for the Catskill Public Theater. Tell us a little bit about the plot of it. There's a little bit of participation for the audience.
Indeed. The play was written by a German author and has been done all over Europe many times, but this will be its U.S. premiere. And the author has given us permission to adapt the circumstances from Europe to the United States. So the play envisions a terrorist-type event where a civilian aircraft is hijacked by a terrorist who announces his intention to crash it into a crowded sports stadium with 70,000 spectators. Mm. And when the Air Force scrambles what they call a rapid reaction force, the commander of that rapid reaction force makes the harrowing decision to shoot down the civilian aircraft.
Yeah, Lee, this is heavy material you're directing here. It's not Bye Bye Birdie. You have had an extensive career across five states in the country. What attracts you to something like this play?
Well, Marshall attracted me to it. Marshall found the script, and in fact, there's everything. We've told people about the issue, and the first thing they hear about is that it's so serious. But in fact, along with being serious, it's chock full of the middle of what our various problems in the world are, which are to do with our terribly fraught world with moral issues, making bets about one person or a group of people living versus another group of people dying, and whether that be in an Israeli-Palestinian context. Or whether it be in our own context of terrorists in the United States when hostages are held, for various reasons, you know, it's terribly much right in the thick of things, and it's not exactly a story that we've never heard about. It's a story that we're very familiar with, yes, mm-hmm. And that hijacking situation is the opposite of something that is, terrible, but in fact, it's the middle of a quandary that we all have right now. We all have right now in various kind of things. So I find it initially. I thought, what are you doing, Marshall? Why are you choosing this summer theater? Wait, but as we tell people about the issue and whether or not, and they will have, of course, the chance to decide whether or not the young pilot that shoots the plane, the commercial plane out of the air, they will have the chance during the course of the evening to watch a trial for him and decide ultimately, is he guilty or should he be exonerated? And that becomes something that really catches my heart.
There's that aspect of the audience participation at that level, but because of the subject matter, and as you kind of alluded to, you know, in the summer, and not exactly theater material, do you find that more challenging to attract an audience, or do you think that that's a reason that the audience will come because things are so much in the ether of what we're all experiencing in the world?
Marshall has maybe a better answer than I, because Marshall has said, everyone I tell about this, they get so fascinated. Right.
Well, I think the aspect of this that the audience is the jury of this court martial. And so at intermission, after seeing the court martial of this pilot who's charged with murder, they get to decide innocent or guilty. and the ending of the play is determined by their vote. So I've been going to the theater for 50, 60 years, and I've never been to a performance where I, as the audience member, determine the course of the play. And I think that's pretty darn interesting.
And it's opening next week?
Tuesday.
And then it runs for how many performances?
We're doing a total of 9 performances, Tuesday through Thursday, for 3 weeks.
So each performance could have a different outcome.
Correct.
And you could be a theater goer going to different performances and experiencing a different outcome with different audiences.
It could work that way. I'd like to invite everybody to come at least twice.
It's free. So how does that impact how you approach the directing of the play as well,
well,
Lee?
Being a theater guy, I know that the theater is in fact built on conflict. It's built on conversations that have opposition. And because a trial, how many lawyers do you know that want to be actors? A lot. How many actors do you know that want to be lawyers? A lot. It's because we're very closely related, the theater and the trial situation. So to me, the dilemma of the argument, right, it is the whole deal which we see on stage, and because the argument is a good one. If it's a good one, we're trying to make it a good one, right? That's what we're rehearsing for. Mm-hmm. So because the argument is so strong on either side, that catches, I think, the audience up, one would hope.
And you are having a guest narrator or sort of a
– Well, we've adapted the role of the judge to be more in accord with the way the U.S. military handles court-martials. So the judge is now a tribunal of 3 judges, and one of them is going to be a different local hero every night. Some representatives, a judge, a lawyer, a DJ from a commercial radio station. And
I'm surprised Tim isn't actually sitting in. Maybe it's not too late.
I think we asked him. By the time he got back to us, we were booked.
They got some other better local heroes.
Well, I don't know about better, but different.
But in terms of a guest involved, that's simply a device designed by Marshall to involve the community. Mm-hmm. We were next to at a farmer's market where we have a guest judge who has a booth, and he's a ceramicist. And when his next door neighbor in the next booth found out he was going to be a judge, they thought, okay, I'm going to come see you. You know, so there is a little bit of that, of drawing in the local sort of audience. I don't know if he's a hero, you know, but he seemed like a really nice guy.
So in rehearsals now, anything surprising you out of the rehearsal process so far?
What surprised me is I've been on a bit of a hiatus, Marshall knows, from this kind of work. And the thing that surprises me is, I guess, how much I really love it, you know, getting back to it. And he makes comments from time to time about how, that's how you do that, right? I remember that. And so it's a fond sort of recognition of old problems and for, you know, honestly, every time I meet a new actor, it becomes a new challenge because each of them are so distinct and different. And some of them are, you know, I think to myself, oh, well, what have I got myself into this time, Lee? I don't know how you're going to. Well, I'm challenged by it, you know.
But rewarding at the end of the day and looking forward to the premiere of it on Tuesday. Marshall, you want to give folks details about where they can get more information?
Well, please visit our website at www.catskillpublictheater.com. There's information about performances, links to make a reservation if you wish. We've established a pretty interesting dinner theater program with the Foster Supply Company. So there are people that are making reservations for dinner at either Arnold's or Canoza Hall, and then to come see the play afterwards. They've created a really cool prefix menu. There's information about Terror, about Lee, about the cast, about our mission in general. And it's a good place to get more information and to make a reservation.
All right. Marshall Schneider, the founding director of Catskill Public Theater, and Lee Van Dyke, the director of Terror, their first production here in their inaugural year. Good luck. Break a leg.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks very much for having us.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, a preview of the new exhibit from Luke Hannum at the Ruft Grouse Gallery in Narrowsburg. This is Radio Chatskill.
My name is Mark, and I want to tell you about my show. It's called Ambient Barn, and it's a curated deep dive into the expansive world of electronic music. Each week, we'll showcase a particular genre or theme. Everything from the early pioneers to the latest underground artists, trends, and microgenres. So plug in with me Sunday night at 11 p.m. because the coolest stuff always happens late at night. Tune in Sunday night at 11 p.m. only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at wjffradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Ruft Grouse Gallery in Narrowsburg is presenting Luke Hannum, Hits and Deliberate Misses. It's the British artist's debut exhibit in the United States, featuring new paintings and drawings made between 2020 and 2024. The Ruft Grouse Gallery's mission is to champion outsider and contemporary artists alike. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Ruft Grouse owner and director Ryan Ward.
Good morning, Ryan, and welcome back to Radio Chatskill.
Thank you so much, Valerie. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Yes, and you have an opening exhibit coming up at the Ruft Grouse Gallery on Friday, the 5th of July, from 5 to 8. And it's entitled Hits and Deliberate Misses. Can you tell us about that and about the artist?
That's right. The exhibition is Luke Hannum, Hits and Deliberate Misses, and it is his very first exhibition in the United States.
Wow.
So we are quite honored, and it's quite a treat. We're very fortunate to be hosting him in Narrowsburg.
Where is he from?
So he is one of the premier British contemporary painters at the moment. So again, we're just very fortunate to have him here with his debut exhibition. Luke grew up in the English countryside and has attended art school in England and has had a quite successful career in music as well, but has really gone full force with his studio painting practice in the last few years. And things are really taking off for him in terms of his profile and building that. And he's really just making phenomenal work. He's really an exceptional artist. So we're very lucky.
And what is his medium?
Right. So Luke has a background in classical drawing and painting.
Mm-hmm.
So in school, he studied the masters and Raphael and Michelangelo. And he's very indebted to Picasso and Matisse. And but he has really turned that into his own, really fashioned his own voice in painting. And so in the last few years, he beautifully oscillates between this kind of classical drawing and rendering, which he just does in a beautiful way, and then in these various other directions that really open up lots of different possibilities with different influences and sources. And in that way, he really resists formula in the studio. And that was sort of the premise for this exhibition in particular. Hence the title, Hits and Deliberate Misses. We're really, with the selections, of drawings and paintings, we are highlighting, underscoring this idea of pursuing different avenues and instincts and urges in the studio as one progresses.
So how does this fit into the concept of outsider art, or does it?
Right. So Luke is sort of the perfect fit for the Rough Grouse in mm-hmm. that the gallery, we champion outsider self-taught artists and contemporary artists. And many times there are parallels aesthetically, this kind of quality in a lot of the artwork that you'll see in the gallery, where there's a direct experience that happens. There's a type of art making that we gravitate towards in the gallery that, where you don't necessarily need, the viewer doesn't necessarily need a lengthy explanation of what's happening in the picture, the painting, the sculpture, and it's just kind of direct experience, and a lot of times there's kind of a human tactile touch and so forth. And Luke is somebody that really straddles both of those arenas beautifully, where, again, he is so skilled, so highly skilled in drawing and finding gorgeous rhythms and movements and compositions and so forth. And yet, on the other hand, when he's compelled to fold in different sources like graffiti, street art, cave painting, etc., the results are really quite phenomenal. And so in that sense, he reflects the self-taught outsider aesthetic quite well, even though he's a trained artist. So it's really the perfect fit for the Rough Grouse.
How interesting. And I believe he has, if you look up Luke Hannam, it's LukeHannam, there are a couple of sites online and Instagram where you can familiarize yourself with his work, which is very interesting. So this is really quite an event to have right here in our Delaware Valley in Narrowsburg. I commend you on that.
Thanks, Valerie. It really is a special occasion.
Now, is there anything else you would like to add before we conclude?
Again, the opening reception is Friday, July 5th, 5 to 8. The exhibition will be up through September 2nd.
Wonderful.
Luke will be at the reception in person, which is a real treat to be able to speak with him. Again, this is not an exhibition that you want to miss.
Listeners, be alerted to that. The Rough Grouse Gallery has this wonderful exhibit up all summer, and you can meet the artist on July 5th between 5 and 8 p.m. So thank you so much, Ryan, for calling in to Radio Chatskill today, and also for the work you do in bringing interesting art to our community.
Thank you so much, Valerie. Really appreciate it.
And thanks to culture reporter Valerie Mansi. That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder to take one small step and join us. Our StoryCorps initiative is a reminder for everyone about the humanity in all of us, even those with whom we disagree. Find out the facts and how to join us and get involved with the One Small Step initiative at wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
The demonization of fact-based journalism is one of democracy's biggest threats, as the number of local newsrooms has dwindled, leaving disinformation to fill the void. This station is an oasis amid all the noise and fiction by building bridges and holding people to account. We do it thanks to you. You give us the tools we need to fight attacks on truth by donating to this station. Here's how.
Give what you can at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill. Today's weather, there's an air quality alert. It'll be humid with periods of clouds and sunshine and thunderstorms this afternoon. Could be heavy with some damaging winds and high